You're listening to Radio Influence.
This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Thursday, September 12th edition of the Landry Football Podcast as part of the Radio Influence Network. Really appreciate those guys and the work that they do to bring you this podcast each and every Tuesday and Thursdays. We take you around the world of football, college football, pro football, getting into the X's and O's, getting into the management experiences, the scouting experiences, giving you a different look inside of the game of football. We've got some good information again with our great folks at MyBookie. And man, some great news. Can't wait to tell you about those guys. More on the great folks there at MyBookie. You got to visit those folks at mybookie.ag today. Man, you play, you win, you get paid with those guys. I'm going to tell you about that in a little bit. A couple of reminders for the film breakdowns and the detailed analysis of the college and pro game. You want to go to LandryFootball.com for that. It's where we do just that. Take you inside the film room. We break down the upcoming games this weekend in detail. Pro, college, we get you ready for it. We recap, but analyze the games from inside the film room after they take place. So you want to go to LandryFootball.com for that. Why? You get a different view of the game. You get to understand the game better, and I think you get to enjoy the game better. You know, if you watch football, you pull for a team, that's great. If that's your enjoy, if you got a fantasy football, you know, angle to it, if you've got a betting angle to it, hey, more power to you. Do what makes you happy. But if those things are you're only tied to the game, then you're going to be tied just to that, and you're going to enjoy the game or not enjoy the game based upon those variables. If you want to, in addition to that, or in lieu of that, get a better feel and a better understanding of the game of football and better enjoyment of what's going on and why to cut through maybe some of the nonsense that you hear, that's what we can help you do at LandryFootball.com. Hey, you got a question you want me to answer? I'll address it right here. Just say, hey, I want this answered on the Landry Football Podcast. Go to LandryFootball.com, hit contact Chris and say, hey, answer this for me on the Landry Football Podcast. Done. Get it done for you. I don't care what it is. We'll address it for you. We'll get it covered for you. So we got a 50% discount on LandryFootball.com, by the way. Take advantage of that because that'll get you an entire calendar year all the way through this football season. The draft, recruiting, free agency, you name it. Take you all the way through next year at this time. So great opportunities at LandryFootball.com. Take advantage of that today. Got to get right into it because I want to talk about a couple of things related to college football scheduling and some of the issues that are coming about, some of the gamesmanship stuff that are going on, and then also a little bit about front office-wise handling some issues. We've had the Antonio Brown situation that has been in the news for a while, and I don't want to get into the minutia of that, but I want to get into how you deal with that situation if you're saddled or inherit a situation like that, or how you can avoid issues like that that could hurt your team. So let's get right into it. So I want to kind of back up a little bit and talk a little bit about in general from an NFL administrative standpoint. How do you deal? First of all, I get asked a lot, how do you make decisions on players' character and whether you want to deal with it or not versus just not dealing with it at all? And then what do you deal when you inherit a problem or when a guy's not a problem? Then it becomes a problem later on. And I think Antonio Brown fits the latter category. He was not someone that was a problem person coming out of Central Michigan. He was someone that was very hardworking, very humble. Success, you might say, ruined him. It got him thinking that he could do no wrong, that he was bigger than the team, that attitude of divisiveness within the team became a bigger and bigger factor. So in that case, you have a non-problem that becomes a problem. How are you going to deal with it? Well, First of all, avoiding a problem. If a guy has a history and you don't trust their character, you don't trust that they're going to be a good teammate, you're better off staying away from it. Now, how do you know that? Well, you do your research on the player. And it's not about just taking the word somebody says he's not a good teammate. You got to know more than that, because the person telling you might be out to lunch. Okay? You need to know what it is you're dealing with. What's the real story? What's true? What's relevant? What's not? And if you don't, you can mess up. You can pass over good players. Or you can make mistakes in getting a guy that's a problem that you didn't really know was a problem. You got to be thorough. And you got to know the right people to talk to and the right questions to answer. And to verify it independently without the parties knowing. So those things, I think, are pivotal to your success in making good decisions. Once you have a guy that's a problem, becomes a problem, then Antonio Brown. I mean, how do you deal with it? It's not a question of what the Raiders did wrong, because clearly the guy that is the villain here is Antonio Brown. But guys like that can only hurt you if you allow them to hurt you, and how you deal with it. The problem that the Raiders had in this whole situation, inexperienced general manager, a head coach that's more than willing to throw his general manager under the bus, because remember, the general manager works for the head coach in this situation. People get confused on that. They get confused with titles. Titles are very often ego-based, like in Oakland. Mike Mayock works for Gruden. So Gruden was more than willing to throw him under the bus. I've talked about it in different platforms. So in this situation, Mike Mayock wanted to, you know, spread his wings, play, you know, feel his oats, play big shot. Well, you don't do that publicly with this type of guy. It is pretty clear that Antonio Brown decided early on that he wanted out. He's the smart one. He's maybe a deviant, he and his agent Drew Rosenhaus, but they are so much smarter than what's going on in Oakland, particularly from the general manager position. They said, hey, we can bait that guy into public comments and sentiment, and they did just that. They kind of stoked the fires, you know, appealed to his sense of ego, and he was able to work his way out of Oakland, get his freedom, so he can go where he wanted to. Now, whether he's successful or not in New England, that's a different story. But the way you have to handle it, a guy like that, let's say, and Oakland made the mistake of signing the guy because of the problems he had in Pittsburgh. You have to know the landscape. A good organization like the Steelers, with a good general manager, not in title, but in theory, Kevin Colbert, if Mike Tomlin, if they can't deal with that, you know, an inferior organization with inferior leadership is certainly not going to have any success with it. So that was a mistaken one. But they can't see that because they have a higher opinion of themselves than what they're realistically should be. Okay, that's not abnormal. People normally think a little higher of themselves than maybe they should. So let's take it from the standpoint of he's on the team. Well, you don't take this publicly. You take the admonishments behind the scenes, you do it privately. And you have the conversations. When you get asked publicly to comment on it, you don't sit there and say, hey, we handle everything we discuss with players, good, pro, and different. We discuss that behind the scenes. You got no interest in putting our business out for public consumption. But when you're ego-based and not knowledge-based, you want to tell everybody how smart you are. You have to try to convince everybody how smart you are, because your actions can't prove that. So you gotta go, well, this is where they stepped over the line. Because had they handled this better, they could have not fallen prey to Antonio Brown. A, wouldn't have signed him in the first place. But again, if you have him, they could have gotten out from under him, probably with some compensation, and keep him away from the team and all the histrionics. All it did was kind of create chaos, which quite frankly I think is going to galvanize the team, but that certainly wasn't the intent. That's going to be the byproduct of the players just taking ownership of the team. But it is an example of how not to do it. A general manager should never be heard, occasionally seen, but never heard. Do your work behind the scenes. Good general managers keep their ego in check. They take care of business. They handle it with calm. They don't get hot under the collar. The hotter a guy player gets, you get calm. You diffuse the situation. You get right down into the right decision. You make good, prudent decisions. You get hothead. If you're a hothead, you're going to lead to problems. You're only going to expose yourself to him doing more and more to embarrass you to work his way out. This is pretty obvious what was going on. obvious to everyone but the Raiders, Mayock. So it's an example that's most recent. But the way you deal with it, you bring him in, you communicate with him. Here's what the fine is. Here's what the suspension is. Here's what the circumstances are. Clear line of communication. Let them know that's that. And do not ever open yourself up to letting a player talk his way out of or act his way out of getting traded or terminated based upon what he wants. You control the situation. If a guy's going to act that way, there are suspensions lists you can put him on. You send a message. You're not going to run roughshod over this organization. You're not bigger than the organization. Because what message does it send to the Raiders right now? They got a toothless general manager. No one respects him. And a head coach that's kind of using him as a buck boy to try to, they see right through that. And you know what? I'm not saying that anybody, they have any other Antonio Browns on that roster. But if there's somebody that's not happy with the circumstance, he knows how to work his way out of there. That's the difference. So you take control of the situation. But you've got to have experience. You got to have know-how. It's trial and error. And I think what you're seeing here is just a lack of that. And that's what leads to some of the issues. So understanding the value of a player's worth on the field and what the problem is and weighing that. Is the problem manageable? Is it a mature issue that can be rectified? Or is it a substantive issue that is further indicative of future problems? What is the track record prior to this? What have been the circumstances to try to correct it in the past? And why is it still an issue? Can you do something that could correct it? Or will you be going down a similar path? All those things you have to ask and answer, and that's going to take you to your answer on whether to take a risk on a guy. Signing a guy, trading for a guy. Then the other thing is risk reward. New England is famous for this. Well, wait a minute, Chris. New England takes risk on guys all the time. You know why? They take guys and they think they can help them as players, and they know they're never in a risk position. The player doesn't conform, he's gone. The player's going to lose out, not the team. There's not one, you know, there's not a player that they're going to sign that's going to be the difference in them getting over the top or not. It's just going to make them better. They're going to go on and win without you or with you. You're going to do it our way or you're not going to do it here at all. So they take again, what's the risk? I'm always willing to take chances on a guy that I think can be rehabbed if the risk is low. I'm not paying a lot of money and I'm not giving up draft choices for a risk. No way, no how. That's dumb. You're not going to outsmart anybody. And if you think you're smarter than other people, you're going to be proven that you're not nearly as smart as the people that have been a lot more successful and a lot more proven than you are. So I think you got to look at those situations. It is going to be an interesting week in the NFL in that there are some teams that, you know, how do you deal with a tough loss? I always say philosophically in the NFL, there is not a panic, but a reaction in the positive once you get embarrassed. We will know about the character of certain football teams on how they respond this week, not necessarily whether they win or not, but how they respond. I think Atlanta falls into that category. Chicago and Denver falls into that category. You know, do you have the mental toughness? Do you have the leadership that's going to respond maybe to an embarrassing performance? I think you can learn a lot about a team early, even though the overall quality and the framework of the team may take a little longer to figure out. You can learn a little bit about the metal and the mental toughness of the teams in play. So we'll learn something pretty early here this week or after this weekend's play. It's kind of where we are with these teams. Watching the injury factor, not just looking at statistically, but, you know, my feeling is not as much work means not as much preparation for the body. When you do take physical contact, as we are this time of year, so I'm watching that as well. The key games I'm interested in this week, no doubt Saints-Rams, really interested Sunday night game, Eagles-Falcons, Minnesota-Green Bay, Seattle-Pittsburgh, Chicago-Denver. That kind of leads the way. Of course, we'll be watching them all, but those are some really intriguing games for different reasons to kind of learn how the teams react, kind of see what week one turns into week two. More of the same, different, Going to be very interesting to see. Also got late news. Sam Darnold is out for the Jets against the Browns Monday night. Monday night football. It's Cleveland at the Jets. You know, the first ever Monday night football game, I remember it vividly. It was the Jets at Cleveland. So these two teams, but it was in Cleveland Municipal Stadium on Monday night football, as Howard Cosell would say. Apologize for the bad Howard Cosell imitation. Keith Jackson, Howard Cosell, and gosh, geez, I'm drawing a blank here. I think it was, must have been Dandy Don. I think he was the original one. Or was it Alex Karras? I'm not sure. Not important, but Howard and Keith Jackson. 1 year for Keith Jackson. Then they brought in Frank Gifford. Howard Cosell was there. Not in the gold jackets, but the maroon ABC jackets to bring in Monday Night Football. So that's apropos of nothing, but it just came into my mind. I don't know why. Sleep deprivation, perhaps. But it is going to be an interesting week. In college football, I want to get into a couple of things, but I want to talk a little bit about the schedule there, that it's not a sexy schedule, but there again, we're going to learn something about a few teams. Sleepy game, Kansas State, Mississippi State, Stanford, Central Florida. Just a couple of games to throw out that are off the radar. You may not have had on your radar. Get them on your radar if you're a college fan. I'm not saying selling it as a great game. I'm selling it as kind of meaningful, maybe underrated in terms of importance, in terms of telling us something about both of these teams, in terms of matching up pretty well as potentially a good game. TCU, Purdue would be another one. I want to talk about something that's come out this week. But before I do, I got to tell you about my good friends at MyBookie. I got a question for you. Let's say you found $100 on the street. Would you pick it up? Keep walking. Of course you'd take the money. So why do you keep picking winners and not betting on them? That's why I go to MyBookie. It's fast, it's easy, and they pay when you win. Let's face it, when you're betting, it's just as important as who you're betting on. I wouldn't be telling you guys to bet with them if they weren't the best. Do the smart thing. If you're going to bet football this season, and you know you are, bet with MyBookie. Did you know you could bet on games after kickoff? Yeah. If by the second half it looks like your bet is going to lose, you can always take the other side in a bet. If the kind of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you multiply your winnings. And no matter how you bet, the NFL season is the best time of year. Join now, and MyBookie will double your first deposit. All you need to do, listen up, use promo code Landry, L-A-N-D-R-Y, to activate the offer. That's promo code Landry, L-A-N-D-R-Y. Visit mybookie.a-g today. Simple. You play, you win, you get paid. You can't beat that. Can't beat the folks at MyBookie. So keep that in mind as you get ready to sit down and watch the games. Make it a lot more enjoyable, too, when you can bring home a little money based upon your picks in the games. The issue of scheduling has come up again in college football. And this schedule, that schedule, weakness of schedule, when we play, who gets to decide. Look, we all know when you play and what time slot you play is going to be directly correlated to the quality of teams you play, and the TV is going to decide that. Alabama's complaining about it, frustrated with it. That's one issue. Let me say this in regards to scheduling. I believe that we have an issue in scheduling that could be easily rectified if the powers that be would take the right approach. Get good football in people involved. Let's let them take control, give up the power to some degree, conference commissioners, to let somebody do what's good for college football. First of all, I do agree people should play more conference games. It would be in a league where we're dividing up divisions. We need to get a greater competition between as many teams as we can within the division as possible, in the conference, rather, you know, so cross division. And we need to have, at least a couple of games, if not three, that are out of conference, but against Power 5 teams, really good teams. I think we need to understand a couple of things, that the schedules are always going to be questioned. I don't believe in the schedules into the future. That's crazy, because on a lot of teams, you don't know how good they're going to be. 10 years from now, you don't know. You could pick two teams, even if they're prime programs. We've seen prime programs take a downturn. I think advanced scheduling is wrong, but people have to do it. Why? Because they got to do it on their own. If it would be managed and organized, and I am not in favor of making college football like the NFL, but there's a lot of administrative advances that they can learn from the NFL. And then in scheduling too far in advance is a big problem. So stop that. Okay, so let's eliminate, well, we can't find people to play for them. Fine, you don't have to worry about it. We'll do it for you. I think there are different ways you can do it. I think you can have, all right, this year it's going to be the Big 12 and the Pac-12 playing one another, and the Big 10 and the SEC having some crossover. Or you mix it up where it's a little bit of everybody against everybody, and you have a little sample size of a lot of good versus good. Look, not everybody that's in the Power 5 is going to be really good, Kansas. Not everybody in the Group of 5 is going to be inferior, Central Florida, Boise. You know, you have those issues. Those guys can be incorporated in. As long as you're not scheduling it out too far in advance, you have a pretty good idea of who's going to be good in the next year. Just think how great it would be after the college season is over, to take into account, once we've crowned a champion, to have what I would constitute a college football alliance of sorts, whatever you'd want to call it, that would announce the schedules for next football season for everybody. Yeah, you could work with the conferences to get the conference schedules in the order and how they want to do it and all that kind of stuff. And you figured out the times. TV's going to have say so about when they're going to play, time of day, and so on and so forth. But who they're going to play and when and where, that could be determined by conferences. And then the out-of-conference, hey, you know probably that, you know, based upon predetermined outsets, you're not going to play SEC Pac-12 back-to-back years, but SEC plays Pac-12 one year, maybe a little bit more, you know, or maybe you mix it up. Wouldn't it be great to sit there in February, let's say, or more, whatever, to go ahead and say, hey, even in January, the different ways you can do it. Here's what, you know, Texas's schedule is going to be next year. Would be really exciting. But I'm not doing it for an exciting moment in the offseason. I'm doing it for better competitive advantages to put good versus good. And we'd have a better feel for who's better. We'd put more emphasis on strength of schedule. We wouldn't be all concerned about you better be unbeaten to get to the playoffs. It'd be a completely different world. And you would not see these mismatch games. Now, you got to find a way, in my view, you got to find a way. Greed can't be the only motivator. You got to find a way to take that money that would go to the inferior programs, and you got to give them some money in the Group of Five so that they can fund their athletic departments. I'm in favor of this. I've been a long believer in this. Start this season. Everybody starts their season last week of August, like week zero. Okay, so week zero would be a thing. We'd literally call it week zero, but everybody would play. You get practice started a little bit earlier, but you're not in school. Summer school's over. Fall hadn't started yet. Practice. I know it's hot. Most people have indoor facilities now. There are ways to get around it. Practice, and everybody plays a school of their choice in kind of a college football version of preseason, where you may play teams geographically. That makes the most sense. Play somebody locally. So you can pay them more, you can pay them money. You don't have to pay them as much money because you're not paying travel, but you're paying them money, more money of which they can keep. It helps those programs. I mean, in other words, let me put this in perspective. If you're in the South and you're in Carolina, not in the Carolinas. Well, it makes sense to play Coastal Carolina because it's you don't have to spend as much money. In other words, they would keep more money because you have to pay more money the further the school is away from you because you got to pay basically their expenses to come there. Well, why spend the money on the travel. Spend the money to where they can keep more of the money for what they need for their programs. So you're not going to play Weber State, or you shouldn't, if you're in the South. You're in the Upper Northwest, you got to play that game. Just makes sense. It's common sense. So you have that game week one. Then week two, then you begin a two-game stretch of where you play two teams around the country in the Power Five. And I think you base it on how things are. In other words, it doesn't make any sense to put Alabama versus Kansas. But, you know, it would make some sense to put an Oregon State versus a Kansas or Vanderbilt versus a Kansas. I think that's, you know, reasonable. And you have a pretty good idea of what teams have coming back. Not always, but you have a pretty good idea. It's not going to be absolute, but you know, it's going to make some sense. So you basically get a feel for teams around the country, some comparative measures. Then you get in the conference play and you play more conference games. That is the most sensible thing to do. But instead, people ask me, why don't they do that? Well, very simply, NFL does it because they understood at a very early stage that there needs to be a collaborative effort to share revenue, share ideas, do things as a league for the betterment of the league. There is no group that exists today that makes decisions for the good of college football. It's every man for himself. The rich get richer. That's fine in a capitalistic society. It's fine. It's nothing inherently wrong. But this is where you get a lot of these ugly-looking schedules that don't make sense. I don't think it really helps anybody. I don't think it's good for anybody. The only thing that it would do is it gives money to some of those programs. Yet there are ways we can get money to those programs, as I just said. You want to play that type of game, play it week one in week zero. Excuse me, not week one, week zero. And then that's it. I think that's the way to go. But the fact that each conference is going to do what's best for their conference and what each team member is going to do what's best for them, you get different agendas and a lot of infighting, a lot of politicized arguments that only serve to hurt the sport. And it's something that they really need to look at. There needs to be unified scheduling. There needs to be unified overseeing of the sport of college football as a whole. I think it's something that needs to be looked at. And it's something that I think if you did that, you would have a better way to go about arranging a playoff system, picking teams for the playoffs. Things would make more sense. You'd have a true sample of who's better and who's not. I don't think college football should be plug and play like the NFL. Automatically win your conference, but I think it should be factored in. I think there are a lot of things that need to go in and looked at. But right now, there's so much of apples to orange comparisons that it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It really doesn't. And it's because college football is the worst administrative sport that we have. I don't know as much about FIFA. Folks that follow that sport nationally would maybe have an argument. There's more corruptness, certainly, it sounds like. But I think there's legitimate issues, and I think it's easily solvable. But it won't be because we're living in a different world. I said on another platform recently that, can you imagine some of the owners today, Jerry Jones, for example, in the NFL? If he had his way, he wouldn't do a damn thing for the NFL. He'd do it for himself and his team. So if he could write his own TV contracts and do his own deals, he'd do it with no regard for who he's playing. That's kind of the way of the world today as opposed to years ago. But years ago, the league would not have survived. It would not have got off the ground if they did not have unified approach and a unified understanding that you're only as good as who you beat. Well, college football's kind of lost that. I think the money with television deals, with these conference networks is great. I think it gives more people opportunities. But if you're going to, and it's not all about giving everybody a level playing field, it's about making things to where the you've got a real chance to put together good schedules, competitive schedules, that's good for the overall sport so that you can grow the sport, that you can be a little bit more transparent in how you do things. And you could do that without affecting the uniqueness of the regular season and the uniqueness of the you know, what I think is still a very integrity-driven college football, even though people would laugh at that, I think there's a lot that is good about it. It's the greatest, but how we administrate the sport of college football is a problem, and scheduling is right at the top of the issue. And it is not the fault of where everybody's scheduling easy because that's what they want to do. I think to some degree that's what people do. Schedule easy, schedule early. Well, you know what? If you scheduled a tough game week two and you scheduled that 1 week game in week zero, you still could have a little time to kind of work your way into the season, but still have something to get ready for in week two. You'd have the two, you have the dangling carrot, and you'd have the ease in game, and you could pay money to those schools. And there are other things that you can do to funnel money to those type of programs. But I do believe we need to look at the possibility of having Power 5 versus Power 5 and Group of 5 versus Group of 5. And for the schools that are not invited to the Power 5, but as Group of 5s are better than a lot of the Power 5 schools, be it Central Florida, be it Boise, be it Houston, be it whomever, I think there needs to be a path of scheduling and a path through the bowl games to where they can prove themselves. A play-in bowl, another bowl, I think that is doable. I think that is, and you know what? If you do that successfully enough, long enough, and you have enough of the other aspects of your program that might interest somebody to bring you into a conference, that's great. But if you don't, you still have a path. You still have a chance. You're not shut out. But by the same token, they don't deserve to be given anything. It has to be earned. But how they earn it is going to be have to be different, just by nature of where they're playing and who they're playing. So just some thoughts there, and you know my feeling, play the season, go right into December after the conference championship games, start bowl games. You know, maybe a week, you know, there'll be some teams play that next week the same day as Army-Navy. Keep Army-Navy's time slot as it is, the standalone game. But at night, maybe early game, you can have a couple of quote-unquote December bowl games start, and you play those bowl games. And you play them all the way through January 1st. And after January 1st, you pick your two, you pick your four. Wherever you, right now we're at four. So let's just say you pick your four teams after the bowl games. You put the matchups together of the teams that have played the best this year, have earned it the most, and put them in some of the best matchups where you can see another good matchup. How often do you say, man, I'd love to see, I don't know, Michigan State and LSU play, or, you know, Utah and Georgia play, you know, something. I mean, just whatever. You put the teams with the best seasons, put them in bowl games, and you can answer some of those questions. I'll put the two best playing one another, but spread it around. Rank them, but put them in bowl games. Then pick you four after that. It would not solve all the problems. You'd still have people bitching and complaining about the four you pick after the bowls. You're never going to make everybody happy, but you have a better sample of evaluation, more exposure of good versus good. If you clean up the schedules on the front end during the season, then you allow for the bowl games to truly take the best teams that had the best year and then pick the best teams after the bowl games. To me, that's what I've always felt. That doesn't get any support. So, but those are the type of things. And there are other ideas, maybe some that are better than mine, that would be justified looking at. Anyway, went on a little bit of a tangent, but that's my thoughts on the scheduling. Appreciate you joining us today. Join us Tuesday for another edition of the Landry Football Podcast on Radio Influence. And remember to check out LandryFootball.com. We'll take a look at what's going on in the world of football next week. Enjoy the games, everybody. Have a great weekend.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
This is a Jim Fannin Show Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
I said this many times. My grandfather, God rest his soul, Papa, I called my grandpa, Papa, he would always say, just cause the bushes don't move, Jimmy, don't mean nothing's in there. Appalachian Mountains, southeastern Kentucky. That phrase made an indelible impression on my mind as he would go through the woods with me, walking, hiking, looking around, searching, observing, turning over a log, watching the critters scramble. My grandfather and I, we walked alone in the woods a few miles outside of Hazard, Kentucky. He taught me how to dream. That was our time together. Nobody else, just my grandfather and I. He dreamed of catching fish at the lake, and boy, I dreamed with him of an in-ground swimming pool. I don't know why I wanted that. Our dreams would get big, they would get bold, and his crazy, vivid fantasies, his dreams, they always made me laugh. We'd both dream about a lot of things, but my papa would say, the woods are alive, Jimmy. Know this, they're always alive. Even though you can't see movement, things are happening all around you, behind the trees, under the rocks, in the bushes. A lot is going on. Just cause the bushes don't move don't mean nothing's there. That's especially true at night, Jimmy, when you're asleep. The woods are really active at dark. And then he went on to tell me that your dreams are like the woods. They're alive. A dream is when one single thought is pictured in your mind as if it's so. And we know that our subconscious does not know the difference between fantasy and reality. And dreams only become reality if you keep them going. Even though you may not see the dream coming true, things are still happening, just like the animals moving behind the bushes and the trees.
The Jim Fannin Show can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.